You're tuned in to Enemy Combatant Radio, broadcasting from San Francisco, and it's Friday, January 21st, and we have an interview coming up with a couple of organizers from the march tomorrow in San Francisco to defend women's lives and women's rights as the anti-choice movement brings its right-wing message to San Francisco. Should be an interesting confrontation of local San Francisco people and the religious right on the San Francisco waterfront tomorrow. So I'll turn the mic over to Liam, and Elizabeth and Lindsay will be coming on to speak with us. So stay tuned.
I'm Liam O'Donohue for Enemy Combatant Radio, here with Elizabeth C., a local organizer, and Lindsay Comey from the Women's Choice Clinic. Lindsay is an abortion provider, and she's also one of the organizers of the Roe v. Wade anniversary march, protesting the anti-choice rally going on tomorrow in San Francisco. I know it's been a busy week here with all the protests going on for inauguration. And I hope people haven't exhausted their desire for social justice, because tomorrow is going to be very important. Starting at 10 o'clock, there's going to be a rally at Powell and Market Street. And starting at 11, the contingent is going to march from the Embarcadero, hopefully ending up at Aquatic Park at 1 p.m. There, they will confront the anti-choice marchers. And we just want to make sure that the message gets heard and loud and clear. Just for a little background information, January 22nd is the 32nd anniversary of Roe v. Wade, the landmark Supreme Court decision that established the constitutional right to reproductive freedom. Basically, from what I understand, Lindsay, yourself and the other organizers are just furious that you know, these people with their right-wing agenda of wanting to outlaw abortion are coming to San Francisco to preach this message. How did this coalition that you're a part of includes so many local groups, from Planned Parenthood to the Ruckus Society, National Women's Political Caucus, ANSWER, National Latina Health Coalition. Obviously, you know, this is something very important to unite so many different diverse groups. Can you tell me a little bit about how this was organized and what your main goals are for tomorrow?
I think first off, we have to look at the fact that we are living in occupied territory, that we have a right-wing president, that we no longer have a democracy, that we have a plutocracy. We have a government for the rich, by the rich. So we've actually lost our ability to be able to represent, you know, the individuals and women's individual rights. So just because you have a law on the books doesn't mean that you have access. So certainly as an abortion provider, and that I've been working in the abortion industry in Oakland for 27 years, and that what we see is that poor women, poverty class women, women of color do not have the same access to health care or getting their physical, emotional, spiritual, economic needs met that women that have money, and primarily white women, have. So when we talk about social justice and we talk about women's rights, we have to look at just this big, broader picture. We have to look at the fact that the biggest threat to reproductive rights in the world today is the American military. That depleted uranium and the war movement across the world is creating horrendous genetic damage to women and children everywhere. So when we talk about reproductive rights, we can't be narrow and be focused on this idea that the right wing wants to just target abortion and put all the problems and troubles of the world onto women. So it's real important that when we look at this agenda and we look at why are they coming to San Francisco? Why did they decide to walk, you know, in San Francisco? And the reason that they did that was not because this is their community, but it's because it is a progressive, politically active, queer-friendly community. And that the reason that they're walking here is to slap people in the face and say that Bush won, and we are coming here to let you know that we can go any place we want. And the march that we're planning and what we're planning on doing is to say, this is our home and that this is a revolutionary community and that no one can slap us in the face with backwards agenda and talk about the fact that women do not have the right to have choice over their body and expect to be uncontested. So the whole idea of this march came when they put out a call nationwide to have 10,000 people come to San Francisco to be opposed choice. So they're saying that all their agenda is to focus on the fact that they want to support women opposing choice. Well, what we have to say to them is that you cannot do that in our community and that it's very important that we look at all these issues and recognize that reproductive rights means having healthy children, being able to eat, having access to food, and really recognizing that, you know, the world is in danger. And that we have to stand up and make a change for that. So the people coming out tomorrow, the point of that is to represent our community. And the people that are opposing us do not represent our community. And they can't walk here unopposed.
Right. And I mean, it's just so shocking that they would even try to get away with this in San Francisco, you know, a city with such a rich tradition of, you know, standing up for social justice. And I know that you guys are really taking this not lightly, that, you know, one of the goals of this is to kind of almost like chase them, you know. You put it in those terms when we were talking before this show started. Like, do you foresee a lot of confrontation tomorrow, or are you basically just, you know, out there to make your voice heard and just kind of get in their face and say, you know, this is not going to stand in our town. Like, we will not take this message lightly.
I think that what we're really saying is that they do not have the right to state that they have moral authority and that they cannot represent that they speak for women and they cannot say that they speak for women and children with moral authority. Mm-hmm. And that what we're saying in our community is that we treat everyone with dignity and care and that no one has a right to come into our community and tell us that we should be ashamed that we've terminated pregnancies because mm-hmm. we knew we could not take care of our children, that we should be ashamed that we love our gay partners and that we get married, that no one has a right to be able to do that. And these people represent the most backward forces that we have being activated by the Bush agenda. So it's very important when we look at why we are going out tomorrow is that we're going out to represent the best of America. We're going out to represent dignity and democracy. And that is that a culture clash? Of course that's a culture clash. And that I have no hope then I'm going to change any of their minds. Mm-hmm. And what I want them to know is that they're not going to change any of our minds either. And the fact that they've called to do this annually, to come to San Francisco on the anniversary of abortion rights and do a march for their reactionary backwards agenda will not go unopposed. So we want them to know that this is not a good plan.
And a lot of people who, you know, are maybe uninformed on this issue might think, you know, abortion is already legal. You know, what do we need to go out and march for pro-choice for? People can already get abortions if they want to, but this isn't really, even, you know, though this they've got this agenda to shut it down, even though right now abortion is legal, it's still very inaccessible for women in many parts of this country, isn't that right?
87% of the counties in America do not have an abortion provider. That only 2% of 2 out of 12 providers in our local Bay Area take emergency Medi-Cal for people with the lowest economic group. The state of California, while we have access in a constitutional amendment that protects abortion rights, does not reimburse physicians at a rate that's actually covers the cost of abortion. That one of the facets that this right-wing group is going to try and come in and say into our community is that abortion providers are racist. And what I wish to say is that it is true that a lot of the original abortion movement that started with Margaret Sanger was racist and part of the eugenics movement, and that it was aimed at women of color and people of color and immigrant families to stop having large families, that we cannot ignore history, but that was a very long time ago, and that movement does not represent what abortion stands for today. And what abortion stands for today is for women to be able to make appropriate decisions about what is happening with their bodies. And that when you have the push for fetus rights that we see that's going on right now, that just because something grows in your body doesn't mean that it has a right to just live there. I mean, people have no problem removing cancer. You know, cancer is something that grows in your body. It's totally alive. If you really believe that life is sacred, well, then you would never have surgery for cancer because cancer is alive. It's a living organism. It's living in your system. The reality is that people have to make individual choices about what is right for them, and that what, as a feminist, we believe in is that every child needs to be a wanted child.
And you know, speaking of choices that people should be allowed to make, already the anti-choice movement has been successful in many states of getting laws put on the books that are peeling back Roe v. Wade. You know, they're already dragging, you know, this, they've been dragging it through the courts for years, and they've been very successful in many cases, right? You know, with parental consent laws, you know, making women wait between the consultation and the actual operation and other things of that nature. Do you want to talk about how this agenda has been kind of, it seems like almost gaining steam, and why it's even more important to, you know, be vocal about opposing it, because of, you know, we've got a Republican Congress now, Supreme Court justices might be retiring, and George Bush might have the opportunity to, you know, change the composition of the court toward a more pro or anti-choice agenda. And it just seems like, you know, being very vigilant about this is not paranoid. It's the reality of how we need to act if we want to keep abortion and choice legal.
Supreme Court Justice Rehnquist is very ill with thyroid cancer, and that he has been the one vote that's really kept Roe v. Wade active. I think that in the Republican Party platform on page 84, they actually stated that they wanted to not even bother with doing a constitutional Supreme Court amendment, that they're actually going after a thing called the Human Life Amendment, where that by giving fetuses rights, you wouldn't even have to overturn Roe v. Wade. You would simply allow the fetus to have more rights than the woman herself. And as a woman, how can I simply become a giant aquarium? You know, why is it that my body is now not going to matter, that my needs are not going to matter, that I have to supply nutrition, I have to take care of myself, I have to deal with my morning sickness, I have to totally submit myself to the needs and responsibility of pregnancy, which there is much more significant danger to pregnancy than there is to terminating a pregnancy. So to ask women to endanger themselves without any recourse, I mean, to me, this is a horrific percentage of death that we're looking at, that women need to make that responsible choices about, is this the appropriate time for me to carry a pregnancy? The Human Life Amendment, if they're able to get that through by giving fetuses rights, wouldn't even have to overturn Roe v. Wade, wouldn't even have to do that Supreme Court fight, because they're working at it from a different angle. Mm-hmm. I think that part of the really insidious part of the Bush agenda is that we have seen the loss of separation of church and state, and that we have seen, you know, Christian theology being brought back into the schools, and that it's very important that we treat cultures with dignity and respect, and that when Christianity it becomes a dominant paradigm in our country, then we are not treating people with dignity, and we've lost the ability to have real democracy, and that it is very important for people to have their own belief systems, and that I personally don't believe that, you know, a baby is alive until they can take a breath, and that they have a human form that can
take place this Friday,
being brought back into the schools, and that it's very important that we treat cultures with dignity and respect, and that when Christianity it becomes a dominant paradigm in our country, then we are not treating people with dignity, and we've lost the ability to have real democracy, and that it is very important for people to have their own belief systems, and that I personally don't believe that, you know, a baby is alive until they can take a breath, and that they have a human form that can breathe. And for me as an individual and a person that has dealt with birth as a mother, I know that your lungs are not developed until you're 36 weeks in pregnancy, unless you're doing drugs to develop them. So it's very important that when we look at these questions of ethics, that it not be driven by law. You know, the overturning of the a ban on late-term abortion procedure, the dilation and extraction procedure, that is miscalled the partial birth abortion. We've never had any legislation say to physicians that you cannot use the safest method to do surgery. That when you have a surgeon who's being told that they can't make the decisions that would be the safest process for a woman that comes into their care, then you have the interference of the church into medical practice through the guidance of the state. So we're really seeing that there isn't a separation of church and state, and that is a significant problem.
Now, one recent case that is obviously familiar to the rest of the country, but especially in the Bay Area, was the Scott Peterson trial. And I know that in the wake of Lacey Peterson's murder, there was the Connor and Lacey's law. Do you want to talk about what possible implications that might have for the pro-choice movement?
That was the first case that was actually given fetus rights. Right. And so Connor, as an unborn child, and trying Scott Peterson for his murder, that was the first major legislative legal inroad into fetus rights. So that's exactly what I'm talking about. I think it's real important that we realize that every woman that has an abortion, this is not an easy decision. And I think that there's this idea that, women just go into the clinic and don't think anything at all about aborting their pregnancy. And while certainly many women celebrate the fact that they're no longer pregnant, the truth is that it is a deep decision that many women contemplate. And that this idea that we need to be ashamed, I think that what the church is doing was saying that women have all this emotional garbage that's going to throw them into depression and cause them to become suicidal for the rest of their life from having an abortion is because of the shame that is put on them. And that when you tell people that you're wrong and you're going to be damned in hell because you had an abortion, that's going to make you feel bad. So it's actually the attack of the right wing in the church that's really causing a lot of people to have this emotional backlash. So when we see women in the clinic, most women are absolutely relieved that they've terminated the pregnancy. The truth is 40% of women during their reproductive era will terminate a pregnancy at one time or another. This is a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. And obviously it would be horrible if we had to go back to the days of back alley abortions and if abortion clinics were closed. But the reality is, with the barriers to abortion in many parts of this country, there are procedures outside of going to abortion clinics to get the procedure done. I know there was a Skillshare at Station 40 last Sunday afternoon that involved a lot of different workshops. And your workshop was, do you just want to talk about what it was and like the importance of what you were talking about?
I think that we look at a culture that for millennium women have been dealing with issues of pregnancy, and that the practice of midwifery has always been to have an understanding of your body and to be able to control reproduction, and that if women became inadvertently pregnant, the use of herbs and techniques to terminate a pregnancy have been around for centuries. Having legal abortion doesn't mean that that's the only time that women get abortions. Just because abortion legal, whether it's legal or not, women have been doing abortions ever since women have been women. Mm-hmm. So the reality is that reproductive control is really about safety and is really about health. Menstrual extraction is a way that women as a group use technology to be able to extract their cycle. So if their period's late, they just use some equipment to be able to remove their period and extract it so that they don't have to worry about pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And that menstrual extraction was developed in the 70s by the Feminist Women's Health Centers, and that it uses common equipment with suction to provide very simple, safe extraction of your period. So when you are in an early stage of pregnancy, that is the best and safest time to remove the pregnancy. The reality about illegal abortion is that in places all around the world where abortion isn't legal, the reason that so many women die and there's such a high infection rate is twofold. One, when you're pregnant, because the fertile mucus allows the sperm to enter the body, it also allows bacteria such as gonorrhea and chlamydia to easily travel into the uterus and the tubes. So that if you get an an affection along with the pregnancy, it's a significant one because it's traveled deep within your body. So infection can be life endangering. That's one of the biggest risks of pregnancies. There's much more risk to pregnancy than there is to abortion. But when you're trying to deal with health and you're trying to deal with how do you take control, we have to look at the fact that women don't understand their fertility, that we're not taught to understand fertile mucus. We're not taught to understand our body cycles. We're not taught to understand, you know, how to work within that time frame to know how to avoid pregnancy. If every woman took her temperature when she was mid-cycle and didn't have sex or used a birth control method, if her temperature was above 99, we'd reduce a lot of pregnancies. Mm-hmm. Because we'd be able to just know that we were fertile and that was something that was happening in terms of our system. So fertility awareness, menstrual extraction, these are all ways that women control their menstruation. And that as activists, we need to know that you cannot take abortion away from the hands of women, that whether it is legal or not, women will need to control their reproduction. And that we have an attack against midwives. You know, that it's also important to say that the safest place to have your baby is not in the hospital. The hospitals are filled with germs. That the safest place to have your baby is at home. That it's only 10% of any pregnancy that has complications. If you develop a complication and don't deliver a baby within 36 hours, you can easily go to a hospital. Hospitals are available. The practice of midwifery, of being with women, understanding the natural birth process, is the safest way to deliver. And yet, we have a situation in California where we have licensed midwives that aren't able to practice because we don't have supervising physicians because of the malpractice insurance, the economic aspects of that. So when we talked about reproduction and we talk about control, we have to talk about this needs to be in the hands of women, that reproduction have to be for and about our bodies. Right. And the people that are coming to town are saying that we should not be in control of our own bodies.
Right. And your Skillshare was one of the, you know, most important things that happened last weekend at this workshop, but there was so many things going on. Just to give a little background, Elizabeth was one of the organizers that helped bring lots of different people from the community together last weekend for the purposes of painting posters, doing screen printing, making t-shirts, patches, signs. There was health workshops, acupuncture, people were cooking. It was great. Do you want to talk a little bit about, I mean, it was just great to see, you know, so many people coming together and mixing art and, you know, education and just everything. It just seemed really inspiring, and it seemed like the people who were there were just getting really excited about the march tomorrow and, you know, all these different groups coming together. Do you want to talk a little bit about why you thought it was important to organize that last weekend, Elizabeth?
Well, one of the major focuses for the Women's Skillshare and Teach-In was to get women who haven't been politically motivated to become politically active, especially in time for the March to Defend Women's Lives and Rights to Access Healthcare. So we were targeting specifically any woman, but especially women of color, young women, and queer women. And so at any point when you walked into the Women's Teach-In and Skillshare, you could be doing several things. You could be making a banner, as you had said before, silk screening, you could be going to Lindsay's workshop, you could be going to get free acupuncture, you could be cooking, like you said before, and really just like participating in the scene and getting politically motivated.
I want to thank Food Not Bombs, by the way, for providing the pastries for the Skillshare last weekend. Also, I wanted to announce that tomorrow night, 8 p.m. at the Brava Theater, 2781 24th Street in San Francisco, there's a very important play called Jane, Abortion and Underground, that's going to be playing. There is information about this on the indiebay.org website, but to give everyone a little knowledge on this play, it's the true story of a group of women who formed an underground abortion service in the Chicago area from the late 1960s to the early 70s, before abortion was legal. The play will be followed by a panel discussion about the current threats to legal abortion in the United States and the future of the reproductive rights movement. Definitely something to be excited about. Is there anything else that you guys want to talk about before we end, other than just, you know, trying to encourage people to come out to the Roe v. Wade anniversary demonstration at 10 o'clock tomorrow at Powland Market, or to meet you at 1 p.m. at Aquatic Park?
For people who don't come over to San Francisco, in the East Bay, there's a tribute to Pat Parker, who is a lesbian feminist poet and an abortion activist, and that every year they do a tribute to help provide funding for her daughter. And it's something that's going to be happening at La Pena at 7 o'clock. So for people in the East Bay, that's another, you know, abortion activist related thing that's going to be at the La Pena Cultural Center.
Excellent. Thank you very much. I was here with Lindsay Comey and Elizabeth C. I encourage everyone to get out in the streets tomorrow at 10 o'clock and tell these anti-choice people to fuck off. And thank you very much for Enemy Combatant Radio. Liam O'Donohue with Mark Burdett.